This is Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith.
Bodies in the mud, just another monster from the sea.
After a 1-2 punch of Hurricanes Helene and Milton, four experts on disaster storms during human-made global warming. Popular storm chaser and meteorologist Jeff Masters leads off. You hear from senior research scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab, Dr. Michael Wehner, highly cited storm scientist Carrie Emanuel from MIT on the risks of superstorms, environmental planner Patrick Marchman, will there be an exodus from the coasts? Climate migration. I'm Alex Smith. Welcome to a packed Radio EcoShock special. Let's go.
You said it was a hoax, a deep state scam, caused by radar from Alaska, Jewish space lasers. Nature comes to call from the overheated sea to put your disinformation on trial. Global warming, you can't say that in Florida, the great state.
Some of the most exciting and yet reliable weather reports come from Jeff Masters and Bob Henson. Dr. Jeff Masters worked for the NOAA Hurricane Hunters as a flight meteorologist. He co-founded the Weather Underground. These days we find Jeff posting at Yale Climate Connections with his Eye on the Storm series. His Hurricane Milton update with Bob Henson warned about a catalog of dangers including torrential rains, inland floods, destructive winds, tornadoes, and a potentially catastrophic storm surge. Hurricane Milton was not just one threat, but many. Returning to Radio EcoShock, Jeff Masters, welcome back after another big one.
Hello, Alex.
It was intense television watching hurricane hunters tossed around inside their storm surveillance plane. Jeff, you had some dicey moments yourself flying with NOAA. What are they looking for, and did they find surprising numbers from Milton?
They're looking to find as much information as they possibly can using all their tools. They've got instruments mounted on the actual fuselage of the aircraft that measure pressure, temperature, winds, and humidity. They also have a Doppler radar on board, which gives you a three-dimensional view of the precipitation inside the hurricane. And they also can launch what are called drop sons, which are little parachute sensors that fall through the storm and radio back information. And for one of the first times ever, they were actually releasing little miniature drones inside Hurricane Milton. These drones flew around for 15 or so minutes and radioed back information. They're still experimental. The data isn't being ingested into the computer forecast models, but the rest of the data from the Hurricane Hunter aircraft is, and that data is critical for making accurate forecasts.
Storm experts talk about pressure in millibars and talk louder when it drops real low, real fast. The rest of us don't know what that means. What were the pressure numbers for Milton, and what do they mean?
So atmospheric pressure is typically around 1,013 millibars. And what that is, it's a measure of the weight of the air on top of you. So if you've got more air on top of you, then it weighs more and your pressure is higher. Conversely, if you don't have much air on top of you, that's low pressure and the air weighs less. So wind will blow in response to changes in pressure. So where you got a big clump of air, a mound of high pressure, right next to an area of low pressure with not as much air, the wind will blow to try and equalize the pressure since nature abhors a vacuum. So the winds of a hurricane are directly proportional to how strong that low pressure center is in the middle of it, and so that's a very important measure of how strong a hurricane is how low that central pressure goes. And Milton's central pressure went down to 897 millibars, so that's more than 10% lower than normal atmospheric pressure, and that 10% drop really drove some extreme winds. In fact, Milton was the fifth strongest Atlantic hurricane ever measured by pressure and sixth strongest by winds. 180 mile-per-hour winds at its peak.
Experts say don't rely on storm levels like Cat 4 or Cat 5. As several on TV said that the storm surge is already determined out at sea. even if the hurricane weakens to Cat 3 when it hits land. How does that work?
So the storm surge, that's the water that's built up by the winds swirling around the center of the hurricane. So as the winds blow over the ocean, it puts the ocean in motion, and it spins around the center just like the winds spin around the center. So when those ocean waters get to the actual core of the hurricane, they've got nowhere to go except up or down. So in the case when the hurricane's out in the deep ocean, a lot of those waters will tend to go down and flow out towards the bottom of the ocean. But when the hurricane approaches land, now it's in shallow water. Particularly off the coast of Florida, you've got a continental shelf where the waters aren't very deep at all, just tens of meters. So that water that's forced to the center of the hurricane now cannot go down very far. And so what you get is a big bulge in the ocean surface. And that giant mound of water gets pulled with the hurricane as it makes landfall, and that creates the storm surge. It's a big bulge of water that moves ashore with the hurricane.
And then somehow it sucked out the water out of Tampa Bay for a short period of time.
Yeah, as the hurricane was approaching Tampa Bay, the counterclockwise circulation around the low was blowing offshore. And when you got wind blowing offshore, it blows the water away from shore. In fact, the water levels in Tampa Bay dropped by about 5 feet as Milton was approaching landfall.
This storm surge, it's terrifying to me, and some who witness it do not survive. Is sea level rise already adding to storm surge, or is that something to come?
Sea level along the west coast of Florida has risen by about a foot over the last 100 years, mostly due to human-caused climate change, making the oceans rise. So that extra foot adds significantly to the damage of a storm surge. We saw during Hurricane Sandy in 2012, when it hit New York City, it did about $60 billion in damage because of its storm surge. Now, we decided that about $8 billion of that $60 billion was extra that would not have occurred without human-caused sea level rise, even though it was only estimated to be on the order of 4 inches, at least what we can say confidently. So that extra 4 inches meant a lot, and that's because the infrastructure of our cities is usually built for the old climate, the climate of the 20th century, where sea levels weren't as high. And if you're going to push an extra foot of storm surge inland, that's going to overwhelm a lot of infrastructure, which was designed for a climate that no longer exists.
And weather reports from South Florida showed 4 days of heavy rain just before Milton landed. It was a different system. And I was worried the already saturated ground would add to flash flooding with the deluge. I haven't seen all the figures yet. I don't know whether that happened, but it's certainly a consideration.
Yeah, a lot of times as a hurricane's approaching, you get what's called a predecessor rain event. That's where you happen to have a front, normal, you know, cold front or warm front that lies over the continental U.S. that acts as a way to concentrate the moisture when it gets there. So we saw this with Hurricane Helene, too. As Hurricane Helene was approaching the southeast U.S., there was a front draped over the southeast part of the country, and we got about 8 to 12 inches of rain over Atlanta, North Carolina, and so on. And when the actual hurricane came, it added to that total. So, yeah, the predecessor rain events moisten the soil, make it more prone for flash flooding to occur when the actual hurricane arrives. And, of course, you're more likely to get power outages because the trees are going to uproot more easily with a wet soil there.
I'd really like to dig in with you, because I know you know these things, how these hurricanes actually work. I mean, I've heard that they cool the oceans. There's some sort of heat exchange going on there. I don't know what happens to that heat energy. Could you tell us how it works?
Hurricanes are heat engines. And what they do is they take heat coming off the ocean in the form of what we call sensible heat. I mean, it's the actual heat radiating from the ocean. And then latent heat, which is the heat energy stored in water vapor that evaporates from the ocean. So when that water vapor evaporates, it has extra energy built into it because of the extra energy it took to convert the water from liquid phase to gas phase. And then when that moisture condenses in the form of rain, it releases that heat energy. So all that heat energy goes to power the hurricane to intensify its updrafts. and increase its winds. So the more heat energy available in the ocean for a hurricane, the stronger it can potentially get. But at the same time all this is going on, the hurricane's winds are actually acting to help decrease the strength of the hurricane, because they're blowing the surface of the ocean, uncovering water from deeper down, which tends to be cooler. So it's kind of a self-cooling mechanism. And if a hurricane's moving very slowly, it'll choke on its own exhaust, so to speak, because the cold water upwelling underneath it will choke off the energy source that has been feeding the storm.
That's interesting, because I was going to ask you, we know hurricanes have no power to move on their own. They get blown around on their course by other wind systems. And Milton was a relatively fast-moving storm, as was Hurricane Helene. Jeff Masters, what are the advantages and disadvantages to a fast-moving hurricane versus storms that stall, like Hurricane Harvey?
A fast-moving hurricane is less prone to dump heavy rains because it's moving so quickly that the rains won't pile up to a large amount over any particular land area. Fast-moving hurricanes are disadvantageous because they tend to bring stronger winds farther inland. So we saw with the case of Hurricane Helene, it was moving about 25 miles an hour at landfall, which is fast for a hurricane, and it maintained hurricane strength 200 miles inland, well into Georgia, bringing substantial damage into that state. Now, a slow-moving hurricane will tend to dump heavier rains because it sits in one place for longer, but the winds don't go as far inland and so cause less destruction farther inland. But on the flip side of that, if it is a slow-moving hurricane, then the places where the winds do blow, they're going to get a lot more damage, because if you subject a structure to multiple hours of strong winds, it's more likely to fail compared to if you subject it to those strong winds just for like an hour or two. And with the case of Hurricane Harvey, yeah, that thing just stalled inland, just close enough to the ocean where it kept on pulling in moisture from the Gulf of Mexico, but it wasn't enough far inland to make the storm actually dissipate. So it just kind of sat there and fed and fed and fed off the ocean, dumping heavy and heavier rains all across Texas, generating up to 50 inches of rain, a U.S. record for any hurricane.
Wow. Well, scientists debate whether warming will generate more frequent hurricanes or just larger ones. Michael Mann of Penn State says either way, hurricane activity is increasing. A few big storms might serve the same energy services as many smaller ones or something like that. Do hurricanes serve a dynamic role? Do these storms have a role in nature?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the sun heats the planet unequally. I mean, the equator gets a lot more solar energy than the poles. So if there were no mechanism to carry heat from the equator to the poles would get colder and colder and the equator get warmer and warmer. That doesn't happen because ocean currents and atmospheric winds act to redistribute heat. So hurricanes are a big part of that. They form over the tropics, and they take a lot of heat energy with them up to the mid-latitudes and then the higher latitudes. So that's an essential service that the planet needs to keep its balance so that we don't get into this state where, you know, the Arctic gets too cold and the equator gets too hot. And if we didn't have hurricanes, well, I'm not sure what we'd have. Maybe even a worse situation somehow. Certainly things would be drastically altered. Maybe ocean currents could make up for part of that deficit. Other types of storms might have to do it.
Veteran Florida meteorologist John Morales from NBC Miami was astonished to see a supercell appearing on the border of Milton, the kind of vertical wind seen in Kansas, but not in Florida, he said. Deadly tornadoes spread from massive Milton just like sparks from Crown wildfires. Lightning filled the sky hundreds of miles away from the hurricane core. Are we seeing something new?
We've never seen a tornado outbreak in Florida anywhere close to what Milton did. We have seen some tornado outbreaks that have made a lot more tornadoes than Milton, though. Milton generated about 38 tornadoes, we think, so far. There are three hurricanes in the past that have made over 100. Most of these tornadoes tend to be weak, EF0, EF1s, winds less than 100 miles per hour a lot of times. But what was unusual about Milton is we had multiple tornadoes that were, like Mr. Morales said, supercell tornadoes like you see in the Midwest. And I expect at least one or two of these are going to be EF2, EF3s. And EF3 is the strongest sort of intensity of tornadoes ever been recorded from a hurricane. We had an EF3 back from a 2004 hurricane, Hurricane Francis. That tornado hit South Carolina, causing damage. So a very rare tornado outbreak witnessed in Florida from Milton.
What have I missed, Jeff? Is there something else that catches your attention about these storms or this hurricane season?
We've seen three of the top eight water levels on record just this year at two of our major stations that have tide gauges in Florida, both at Naples and at Fort Myers. We had Hurricane Debbie, Hurricane Helene, and now Hurricane Milton all set top eight water level records at these stations. So that speaks both to how unusual it is for the west coast of Florida to get storms like this, and also to the fact that sea level rise is making it easier to set these sorts of records. Also, Milton was the fifth strongest Atlantic hurricane ever recorded, 180 mile per hour winds, central pressure 897 millibars. That's the kind of thing we expect to see with climate change. With a warmer ocean, in fact, a record warm ocean like we had this year, that helped very directly to support Hurricane Milton's incredible intensity and that of Hurricane Helene just 2 weeks prior, Cat 4 storm. Record warm waters mean more Cat 4 and Cat 5 hurricanes.
From Yale Climate Connections, we have been speaking with meteorologist and confessed storm chaser Dr. Jeff Masters. Get his excellent updates at Yale Climate Connections. You can find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Jeff, thank you for stopping by when the world's going kind of crazy about hurricanes and typhoons.
Sure, Alex. Always happy to chat.
For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
Even longtime weather reporters were shocked by the 1-2 punch of hurricanes Helene and Milton. Dr. Michael Wehner is not. Michael is a senior scientist at Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. He testifies to Congress and appears in major media, as well as on Radio EcoShock last February. Dr. Wehner has published extensively on hurricanes. From California, Michael Wehner, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks for having me back.
An Atlantic magazine headline reads, Milton is the hurricane that scientists were dreading. You say the rapid development of Milton is shocking, but not surprising. How come?
Well, we've long known that rapid intensification of hurricanes and tropical cyclones can happen when the water is underneath is warm because it can provide so much energy, and that because of climate change, because of global warming, this circumstance is it's happening more frequently where the water is warm enough to enable rapid intensification. So this is something that has long been expected. I mean, I don't think this is the first one of these that has been made more intense by climate change, and it certainly won't be the last. So it's shocking, don't get me wrong, but it's not surprising.
It is still early as we speak with a lot of unknowns, but what seemed remarkable to you about Hurricane Milton as it spun up in the Gulf of Mexico? Anything?
Well, its rapid intensification was particularly large. The formal definition is 35 miles an hour increase in wind speeds in 24 hours, and it far exceeded that. And so that kind of, you know, explosive growth in intensity and the energy of a storm is pretty remarkable.
With two colleagues at Lawrence Berkeley Lab, you issued a provisional attribution statement about extremely intense rainfall during 24 hours of Hurricane Helene. You said, quote, our best estimate is that climate change may have caused as much as 50% more rainfall during Hurricane Helene in some parts of Georgia and the Carolinas, end quote. Why were rains so extreme that Asheville and many other small communities were partly washed away?
Well, what we've known from this study and quite a number of other formal peer-reviewed studies of other hurricanes is that climate change makes the rainfall more intense. It really kind of supercharges the rainfall in these very large storms. And that's because of two things. One is that it's well publicized, I think, that the warmer air can hold more water. And so when the air is fully saturated, like in a hurricane, there's 7% more water contained in that atmosphere, in that air, per degree centigrade of warming. But that's not the end of the story. The other part of the story is that because it's warmer, there's also more energy. Because there's more energy, the winds are a little bit stronger, you know, 5 or 8% maybe. And that causes the vertical motion of the storm to be considerably stronger, making the storm more efficient. And so you sort of have a double whammy. You've got more moisture because of the ability of the atmosphere, warmer atmosphere, to hold more moisture. And then the storm is more efficient at raining out that increased available moisture.
And on the subject of extreme rains, you co-authored a paper in 2022 finding that both extreme three-hourly rainfall rates and extreme three-day accumulated rainfall amounts are increasing. What does that mean, and why does it matter?
Well, it means that severe storms are more severe, and that floods are bigger, and that the impacts, the suffering of the people that live in those regions is made worse.
Rubble from Hurricane Helene was still lining streets in coastal Florida as Milton barreled towards them. Research published February 2023 in Nature Climate Change was titled Increasing Sequential Tropical Cyclone Hazards Along the U.S. East and Gulf Coasts. So it sounds like scientists were already aware and looking at multiple impact events like the ones we've just seen.
Well, having sequential storms is something that has happened in the past and will continue in the future. I think what's different is that because the frequency of major hurricanes, you know, Category 3, 4, 5, is increased, the odds of having two rather serious ones in a row is increased.
But you are co-author of a June 2022 paper in the same journal titled Declining Tropical Cyclone Frequency Under Global Warming. So are we expecting fewer hurricanes, but larger when they come?
Well, you've just highlighted probably the most interesting question in hurricane climate science, climate change science today. And that is, what's going to happen to the frequency of tropical storms across the planet of all strengths, from tropical storm strength to Category 5? And there's differences of opinions. In our paper and in some of our other work, we've shown that the total number of storms will decrease with a warmer world, and that's because the atmosphere is somewhat more stable in a warmer world. But there, another point of view, Carrie Emanuel being one of the proponents, is that that's not the case, that the number of hurricanes across the world will stay more or less the same. I think we all agree that the distribution of hurricane winds is shifting towards larger values. So whether or not there's more or less is sort of one interesting question. But given that the big storms are the ones that cause the most suffering and damages, those are going to be bigger and more frequent. I think we're pretty much on the same page, regardless of what we think about this other question of frequency. I guess I would also say that, you know, I don't think we know the answer to this, but it could be different in different basins, that, you know, what controls the frequency of hurricanes in the Atlantic could be very different than what controls in the Western Pacific, for instance.
Yes, I kind of presume that the theory would be that the atmosphere would become more stable as the planet warms. And by the way, listeners, that's not a good thing, because we need the winds and the ocean currents to keep flowing as they do now. But, Michael, how far off would that stabilization be in theory, and could we encounter more violent disruptions in the transition?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't think I know the answer to that. But I do know that, you know, storms like Milton are not as unusual as they once were. Milton is currently the strongest tropical cyclone that's happened this year, but it won't be the strongest in the decade, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think it's rated now as either the fourth or the fifth strongest Atlantic hurricane that we've recorded so far. But yes, there have been some giants, Wilma and Rita and Harvey, and on we go. I wanted to ask, have these twin disasters of the 2024 hurricane season, which is far from over, have they left a story for scientists and like yourself to study, or do we already know enough?
Well, there are interesting questions about the impacts of these storms that still remain. For Hurricane Helene, this storm is a little different than the ones we've made attribution statements in the past, the important ones being most recently Hurricane Ian and Hurricane Florence, before that Hurricane Harvey. And there, when we were talking about the rainfall, it was all in relatively flat areas, Florida and coastal Carolina and Houston, Texas. And this storm, of course, was in the mountains, the Smoky Mountains. And topography is an important factor in the pattern of rainfall and the amount of rainfall. And so I think an interesting question for me is, you know, how does the presence of steep topography interact with these known effects of climate change on rainfall? You know, does it make it worse, or does it have no effect, or less? I mean, we don't know the answer to that yet.
Yes. When we talked in February, you called for a new Cat 6 designation to cover more powerful storms as climate changes. Has there been any progress on that?
Well, I think to be clear, we're not advocating for an official expansion of the Saffir-Simpson scale. In fact, you know, our view on this now is that the Saffir-Simpson scale is useful for pointing out that the risk of major hurricanes has increased. There are, you know, more Cat 5 storms than there used to be, and you know, these Cat 6 storms would be a new phenomenon. But what we really feel is that as a warning tool for warning the public of the dangers of an impending storm like currently with Milton, the Saffir-Simpson scale isn't very good. A single number can't convey the kind of risk that the information about risk that people need to know to take action. And so instead, what we're encouraging is that people utilize the verbal warnings and the graphical products of the National Hurricane Center, whether they obtain them directly from their website or from their local broadcast meteorologist, because these tell you exactly what you need to know. You know, are you in a flood zone? You know, are the winds going to be, you know, very, very damaging in your particular neighborhood or region, and, you know, and whether to take action or not. And so we urge people to, you know, in a case like this with an impending storm, to pay no attention to the category and pay more attention to these detailed products so they know how to stay safe.
Yes, one of those new detailed products that I just saw on a local station in Florida is that they can project, I don't know if they're doing it by satellite or by radar, where the debris fields are, so that if stuff from the previous hurricane gets lifted up into the air and thrown around, they can actually map out where it's going. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, indeed. Radar can show when this is moving, and that's one of the ways that tornadoes can be visualized in real time by the debris that it kicks up. And in fact, Milton has produced quite a large number of tornadoes, and so that's yet another hazard from tropical cyclones that is still, you know, not as well understood as it needs to be.
And at least one of those cyclones generated by Milton was an EF3, which one weather person said they couldn't find any record of that in that part of Florida before.
That's astonishing.
Yep. So as we wrap up here on a personal level, and maybe not speaking for the lab, Michael, you saw this coming many years ago. How does it feel to now live out this awful confirmation of those predictions you and your team made? How do you handle that?
Well, it's awful, of course. I mean, you know, we've known this was coming, you know, that this kind of extreme weather was, you know, dangerous climate change being manifested through this kind of extreme weather. And the human tragedy is moving for anyone, especially, you know, for these last two storms, because I've had friends who are impacted. And, you know, that moves this out of the academic regime for someone like me and becomes much more personal.
Yes, I also have a sort of distant friend, but a friend nonetheless in Asheville, and I've been hearing some reports there that are Pretty scary. From Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, we've been speaking with senior scientist Michael Wehner, and you can find links to all the science and news we just talked about in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Michael, thank you for sharing time with us as the storms roll in.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio.